Recording.
Hello and welcome to recording number 4 of Gary Gygax's anthology, Knight Errant. An annotated reading. Today is October 16th, 2021. Last recording, we finished the first short story, the inappropriately named Heart of Darkness, where we saw Gord and Chur and the wizard Enver Zig delve into the depths of Castle Greyhawk, and a very surreal experience it was. I really didn't think it was much of a story, either for lore or as a story in itself. Now, tonight, we're reading part one, and we're starting off here, The Weird Occurrence in Odd Alley, which I remember as one of my favorites out of the short story, but I've never really taken it apart before. So, we're going to be looking for, as always, the lore that we can use, and we're going to look for, great description that Gygax is well known for that we could use for, various things in the campaign, reading off descriptions of, spell effects, of fighting. So there's always a lot of, resources in these stories as well that aren't just related to the lore of the Greyhawk setting. And finally, the last thing we follow is the story itself. Now, sometimes the lore of the characters in the story of the characters ends up being lore, where we can get good information about famous NPCs and such. And so that depends on how much they're actually in the story. Neither Gord nor Chert have really made much of an inroad as NPCs within the larger campaign. Whereas when we were reading Sea of Death, we had Eclavdra, we had Obmi, we had various demons and devils that were named. And so those characters, their story and the way they acted, the way they looked, the way they were presented, that was actually moved over to lore. All right. So I'm going to start off right here at the beginning. It is page 47, paragraph 1, and we begin The Weird Occurrence in Odd Alley. Cross my palm with nobles, noble youth, and you shall have my best reading. With that, the old Rene crone cackled and winked suggestively. Chert snorted derisively, but Gord complied with the request, dropping half a dozen silver coins into the dirty, dried-up old hand. The crone wrapped her claw-like fingers possessively around the treasured nobles, and the payment quickly disappeared into the folds of her soiled robe. Break. So here we have a Rene, and the older Rene are known for, reading fortunes and divinations, and not just as like a kind of scam or anything. They are actually supposed to have magical abilities, and the older women of the tribe, as described in Saga of Old City, they kind of direct the tribe, whereas the young women are almost disposable at a certain point. So I don't know when, perhaps with the coming of certain magical powers, it changes the role of women within the Rene society. Now, the Rene are obviously gypsies, and they are done in a way by Gygax that makes you think of the werewolf movie with Lon Chaney Jr. becoming a werewolf after encountering the gypsies, or, basically any one of the popular versions of gypsies and such. So anything from movies and perhaps from different books and such. Now, there's a question here. Is there any linking of the Rene to any of the major racial stocks, Beck, Lunar Sioux, Flan, or Iridian? Now, there has been some description that physically Gord appears very much like Rene, and the Baklunish he's encountered have mentioned aside from certain aspects, he looks Baklunish. But the Rene are supposed to not be from Earth at all. They're supposed to have come from a place called Rop, which is really kind of a slang version of Europe. Now, we're on Earth with an O, and they may be from Europe with an R-O-R-H-O-P. So the Rene themselves believe that they are not of this Earth, that they've crossed over into this Earth. All right. And I wanted to mention now, I don't know if Gygax at this point has changed the value of coinage. Now, one of the things I really liked about Saga of Old City was how valuable coins were. And in fact, the coins went down to these iron drabs. You had bronze Zs, brass bits, copper, and you when you got all the way up to silver, you'd already gone up quite a bit on the coinage. And in fact, dealing with the Rene, Gord could have inadvertently got this the Rene from Gord dealt with the Rene and inadvertently got himself attached to this Rene maiden, and they offered that if he wanted to pay her blood price, that she for 12, he could kill her for 12 silver nobles. And so, you know, 6 silver nobles for this reading is an incredible amount of coin. We don't know the context of why Gord is paying so much, but it could be that Gygax has actually, changed his value system. We're dealing with a little short story from New Infinities, the New Infinities book, Knight Errant. So Gygax may have ended up, deciding that he's going to go with the old copper, silver, gold currency. But normally, if I were reading this from Saga of Old City, that would be quite a bit of coin right there. Six silver nobles. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 47 and the third paragraph down. And there was a question asked if the Rene coming from Rop is just a Gygax era thing, whether it is. It actually is not mentioned in the books. The first is from the 83 box set. The glossography there on page 7 mentions that the Rene are from Rop. Then it is mentioned in the Adventure Begins, and the Player's Guide to Greyhawk also mentioned that the Rene. And finally, in the Living Greyhawk Gazetteer, it is mentioned that the Rene are from Rop, and there's a mention of Rop in the Living Greyhawk Journal number 2. So it has been something that is accepted. Now, like anything coming out of the Greyhawk campaign, feel free to drop it or use it. It's either if you like it, you use it. If you don't, you ignore it. But it has been both eras, as we see from 83 right up into third edition. It has been accepted, although not mentioned very much. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 47, paragraph 3. "Read your read, woman, and make it clear," Gord snapped. "At such prices, you should predict the future unerringly." The old woman's icy glare sought to penetrate the young thief's soul. "Mind your tongue when you speak to a wise woman of the true folk, young Gord. Remember, you sought out old Anya, not she you." Gord shrugged but said no more. Mollified, the ancient hag brought forth a small leathern container that looked to be as old as its owner. She held the container in her left hand and, while making odd, jerky passes over the top of the antique box with her free hand, mumbled in a high-pitched voice, "Take now the runes and sigils of your fate." Then she solemnly extended the mysterious container and motioned for Gord to reach inside. The contents of the leather coffer were not visible to the young thief as he reached up and inserted his hand into the box. His fingers carefully scouted the mixed group of small objects that seemed to squirm and twist away at his touch. Gord's forefinger and thumb played a strange game of tag with several of the elusive contents inside the pouch until, having grown tired of the chase, the young thief clamped all five fingers around a jumbled mass of jiggling mystery and extracted the mysterious mess from the box. Before he could examine his catch, however, the crone spoke again. "Now loose them one by one, if you can," she commanded. Gord wanted to obey the old woman's orders, but the task proved to be much more difficult than he imagined. The young rogue fought to suppress a groan as he strained to do as he was instructed. The strange objects worked independently on their own behalf, in spite of Gord's obvious wishes, each single-mindedly intent on wriggling out of his hand. Chirp perched himself on the edge of the bench he'd been offered as respite, and watched with more than casual interest as his friend managed to hold on to all but a few of the squirming things clasped with his sweating hand. Old Anya called out the names of the fallen components as Gord slowly spilled them. Bauble, skull and snake, shoe, dagger and stinger, rat, eye, nothingness, coffin, horse, torch, gateway. Gord shook his now open hand, but a small object refused the offer of freedom, seemingly glued fast to the startled rogue's palm. Old Anya seized the hand and peered at the last sigil there. "A fool's cap," she exclaimed gleefully, and then sat back in her rickety chair, and in abandoning what small scrap of propriety she may have possessed, cackled hideously. All right, break. So, and, you know, there's a question if these Renée have gotten to Greyhawk via Ravenloft. And while that's an option, it's not really what I always thought of with them. But it is a very odd thing. Now, I think it's because Gygax really didn't, either adding to the mystique of the Renée, or because he didn't really see where to fit them in and still keep them so gypsy-like. Because the Renée are very much, cut of the cloth of the, popular fiction gypsies.
Yeah, there's a people called the Vistani in Ravenloft, and the Renée are kind of like them because they're also sort of gypsy-esque, and that's why I was wondering. And I think like Ravenloft is some kind of pocket dimension, or I forget exactly.
Yeah, it's some kind of gateway dimension. I thought, though, that you couldn't get out of it, but maybe the gypsy Renée or such can. I don't really know much about Ravenloft. I played I-6, and I never even played I-10. I've read through some of the material from the box set, and I know that they came out with an interesting fortune-telling set from the Forbidden Lore box set for Ravenloft. And then there was something about the Guide to the Vistani, and I've passed through my hands, but without very much interest. Now, I think the Vistani are, again, pretty much cut from the same cloth as the Renée. Although they're supposed to be more like the Atloy, with the classical gypsies riding around in caravans and having their gypsy wagons and such.
Yeah, and I'm not a proponent of such a theory. I'm just, you know, one speculator.
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm just not familiar with it very well. I mean, I think, you know, there's people who really delve into Ravenloft the way that we delve into Greyhawk.
Sure.
And I don't know. I just, it's never been really a setting that called to me. And now, when I first started playing, I had set I-6 and Ravenloft up in Perrinland. And, you know, as a kind of like mountainous area. And I thought it fit very pretty well up there. But it's not one of, because it's so much standalone, that I don't think, you know, like we've moved in several modules, like I-7, Baltran's Beacon, and X-1, Isle of Dread. I-9 has a very tenuous leak because of the artifact, the Cup and Talisman of Al-Akbar. And so they moved I-9 into Greyhawk. And B-2 and B-1 have more of a link in a sense that Holmes Basic was a precursor to AD&D. So in a way, it was kind of a precursor to what's going on in Greyhawk, and they really fit the setting, you know. Now the more I got into it, though, I really I-6 just seemed more and more Dracula to me, you know. And I don't know what they did, but when they went into things in the setting, like having like a Frankenstein monster, and the things really became very, you know, kind of didn't really have a good Greyhawk feel. But I could see merging the two, or at least having you know, a way to get back and forth from Ravenloft to Greyhawk. And yeah, this is a little reminiscent of Dune, where the Bene Gesserit test Paul with the gom jabber. And but I do like it here, where we are getting a description of this process, and how, you know, like she's not fortune telling with cards, and she doesn't have a big glass ball or tea leaves or reading hands. They're doing these sigils and runes, although it seems to be just sigils. And also the added business where they have that. Now this is again where Gygax's description ability comes in, where I love hearing about how they're wiggling, and you can't get a good grasp on them. They seem to move independently. I thought that was a very nice touch, and in fact, outside of, like you're saying, the similarity, the feel of that test with the gom jabber, I don't think I've heard fortune-telling described exactly like this anywhere else that I can remember. Now, it reminds me of, I'm trying to think where it was. There was some, maybe it was Doctor Who or something, where you had to stick your hand into this, you had to stick your hand into something and some root, some creature that might sting you and kill you, which was, again, very much like taken from Dune. And yeah, it is kind of similar to that strange thing, putting their hand in and just having to grab the whatever's there.
Yeah, that was the only bit. It wasn't like he had to keep it in there until or he would die or something. But
yes,
it was just like the blindly putting the hand in your bag and just, you know, having to rely on the sensation or whatever.
And okay. So, the comment here is correct. It was Flash Gordon the movie.
Nice.
And, that they had the actor who played Prince. Somebody other. He was like a Robin Hood ranger kind of guy. And they, Flash and him, they had to do this test where they'd stick their arm in this thing. So, yeah, that's where that's from. But again, that, I believe, you know, somebody had stolen from Herbert. Frank Herbert, who wrote the Dune books. Yeah, that was a cheesy picture, but I loved the Flash Gordon. I love that movie, and I wish they'd done more of the sequels. It was exactly what Flash Gordon, I thought, exactly what it could be, because the old Buster Crabs that I watched were just as cheesy, but with worse special effects. So that's what that does. Fun. And it was silly fun. All right. So we get this a bit of a lengthy thing. And then she names all these various things that are in there that we, the bauble, the skull and snake. Now, Gygax, you know, he's not going to, I think, explain it to us. And he gives us these various, it's a mysterious mess, as he describes. So he is not going to tell us how the fortune-telling works, but he gives us these various names and clues and ideas that can inspire us to create our own. And I think that really works. Like I said, it is similar to other things, but in itself, I haven't heard of any fortune-telling stuff being quite like this. And then, who knows, we'll go and turn on something like the Night Gallery and see that it was like an episode on the Night Gallery. But I'm not familiar with anything quite like that. All right, I am going to restart. It is page 49 and the first paragraph. "Enough of this," Chert spat impatiently. "Give the meaning or return the silver." "Oh, yes, you both shall have your glimpse of the future, just as promised," the crone screeched mirthfully. She sat back, a self-satisfied look dominating her prune-like face. "Listen carefully now," she purred, gazing fully into Gord's face. "You and your overgrown associate." At this she paused to throw a disgusted glance in Chert's direction. "Have stolen something that many hold dear." She leaned closer and enunciated the next few words with a purposeful emphasis. "It is of evil." The old hag sat back and let her warning sink in before continuing her soothsaying. "Know now that you are hunted because of this. None you have spoken to will give you gold for the trantle, or at least as much as you two think your prize worth. You have sought offense throughout most of Greyhawk, and come here as a last resort." All right, break. Trantle is just an object. It's kind of like saying a MacGuffin or a thingamajig. So in itself, she's not describing what they've stolen. It is just a word that means a general object. So I wanted to mention that this version of the the gypsy fortune teller, it really is taken from, if we go back to Shakespeare and to Macbeth with the three witches, and they are the soothsayers, but everything they tell him while being true leads to terrible things for him later on. So there's always this thing about not trusting, but having the old hag as the soothsayer witch, that is, very classical, and that's coming where this idea of the crone Rene woman. Okay, and so a crone is simply an old woman. So usually of a very, very haggard appearance, hag and such. Now, Gord and Chert are in the city of Greyhawk. So this is, what we're reading is this, an anthology. And it is a series of short stories that Gygax wrote. These came out in 1987, as did Artifact of Evil came out in 87, Sea of Death came out in 87, and Knight Errant. So we're on to Knight Errant. We finished Sea of Death. And yeah, it's... So, now, at the end of the first book, Saga of Old City, Gord, Chur, and Geller are successful. They've gone to the tomb of that catablind demon, and they've come all the way back to the city of Greyhawk. And Curly Greenleaf, not Geller, Curly Greenleaf, he wants to take the artifact that they found and have it examined. And he's going to leave the city. Now, he's promised to reward them. So when they took robbed the tomb, they found a lot of gems and such. And what's happened is he's left all of that with Gordon Chert. So Gordon Chert have a merry old time in the city of Greyhawk, but they spend their money, even though it's a large amount of for what they get from the gold, the gems and the gold and such. And they start doing various things. They also get bored. So at this point, we are somewhere at the end of between the end of Saga of Old City and the beginning of Artifact of Evil. Because by the time we start Artifact of Evil, that takes place in the Principality of Uluk and the western side of the Pomarsh. And Chert has left Gord, gone off adventuring on his own, because he's gotten bored with the city of Greyhawk. So we know here Gord and Chert are together. Odd Alley, now this is the weird occurrence in Odd Alley. Odd Alley is within the city of Greyhawk. And the first story that we had covered, Heart of Darkness, was also started in the city of Greyhawk and then went on to explore Castle Greyhawk and ends up again in the city of Greyhawk. So most of these short stories take place within the city of Greyhawk, not all of them, but most. And they take place in that time period between Saga of Old City and Artifact of Evil. So that's the where and when of where we are right now. All right. So, I just wanted to say that what we're getting here is if it is not influenced by the Macbeth by Shakespeare, it's influenced by all the other stuff that was influenced by Macbeth and the witches from Shakespeare. And the classical soothsaying witches come from Macbeth, but you can find them everywhere. You know, you can find them in children's shows and cartoons, you can find them in adult movies and such, but normally when you have like the hag-like soothsayer, that is based on Macbeth. All right, I'm going to start again. We are on page 49, and we have it's the fifth paragraph from the bottom. I wanted to say we do know, as far as the story goes, that obviously Gord and Chur are stealing stuff again, and they've stolen something. And whether or not the Renee is right, and I suspect she is, to make it the emphasis greater, they've got some cursed item, or at least she claims it's cursed. Now, you cannot believe what anybody says in these books. Gygax loved the unreliable narrator. So there could be a lot of reasons why she would tell them this story, and it might be true, or whatever they've stolen, she might want to get her hands on it. But obviously they've been having trouble selling, fencing it, and they've come to her. Like she said, Gord has come to old Anya, not she to him. All right, I'm going to restart, fifth paragraph from the bottom, page 49. Gord was nodding as she spoke, but his barbarian companion was scowling. "Easy enough to guess, old bag. Get to your reed," said Chert. Old Anya gave Chert a look that was sufficient to wither a flower in first bloom, but thereafter ignored him and went on. "There is a place that is neither here nor there, but if you leave from here and go to Odd Alley, you will realize your fortune from what you have appropriated." The ancient Rene wise woman then sat back, gazing from one to the other of the two young men. Her face was impassive, but old Anya's eyes fairly danced with malign amusement. Chert stood up and moved toward the crone, his face clouded with growing rage. If you want to play games, I'll show you games, you miserable old. We leave now, Gord said, using all his strength to pull the hulking barbarian away from his intended target and out the door of the ramshackle establishment. Peals of crackling laughter followed them out the door, but Gord continued to steer his enraged friend toward Odd Alley. Odd Alley, an area within Greyhawk's old city, was so difficult to locate that most citizens of the metropolis were unaware of its existence. Gord, a consummate thief, burglar, and swordsman, had spent many years in the slums of Greyhawk practicing his skills. He knew the people in the city. So many of the places within Odd Alley were not foreign to him. But one thing that was not familiar to him was an inability to dispose of loot. Chur, on the other hand, was a woodsman from the distant east, and as such was not entirely accustomed to Greyhawk's nooks and crannies. However, as Gord's friend and companion for the past year, he did know quite a bit about hardships in the wilderness, life-and-death battles, and now thievery, as it were. And he knew Gord's code of ethics where thievery was concerned. The honorable thief took only from takers, swindled the dishonest, and stole from those who gained by foul means. It was a long-standing point of honor with the young rogue, one the huge hillman sometimes found hard to accept. If there were occasionally a question regarding the line between honesty and fairness, Gord usually allowed his friend to make the decision regarding the prospect. After all, there were more than a few eligible marks in a city the size of Greyhawk. All right, break. So, normally, you know, like this is story and it's regarding Gord, and but it's also, I think, encapsulates how Gygax would look at non-evil thieves. Now, I'm not sure I would put Gord as non-evil, but Gygax definitely has him as like neutral or neutral good even. And some of the actions described certainly would make that alignment kind of questionable. But I think that what he's given Gord is an ethos so that he can remain as like a non-evil player character. And Gygax, I believe, did not run evil characters. I don't particularly like to do it myself. Some people do, but it is a way to explain how a thief, you know, and how their actions could be conveyed as neutral or even neutral good. I'm also not a big user of the alignment system, so, but I think that right there is a good description of how a DM can state to have, you know, a rogue or a thief who is of neutral or neutral good alignment. And yeah, you know, it's he also does that. There's been a question is that, you know, Gord could have started out as like neutral evil and ended up as neutral good in his tendencies. And there is this thing with Gord and the way Gygax had his character, and perhaps ran all of his characters, was that Gord learned. Gord developed abilities as time went on, and even his character class changed from the classical thief to a thief acrobat, which was something new. And also, he trained Gord in using fighting, so he could use two weapons. And he had learned was a better than normal, like better than a normal thief would be in using, you know, using swords and two weapon fighting. So Gygax was not as rigid as the rule system might imply. And I'd always taken that as a given that there is the DM, you know, just makes the game, the setting, the rules to be what they want. And that is what, you know, first edition had as a kind of this thought process, the default, was always that you did what you wanted, what worked for you as DM, and you ignored the rest. You added things or dropped things. And it really, there was no reason to go to any other additions than first, because you could simply shape it exactly at the way you wanted to, but you don't get to sell rule books that way without changing additions. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 50, and it is the second paragraph from the end. "What are we going to do now?" Chirp asked, his tone implying a sense of despair. "I told you that dark temple was no place for life-loving thieves to rob. If you had listened to me, we wouldn't be in this mess." Not wishing to hear yet another lecture in what was becoming a continuous series, Gord thought fast. He and Chert had stolen into the great temple of Neril, and had taken a reliquary of red gold from the altar of the Sanctum Sanctorum. This gem-encrusted object was worth a king's ransom, that is, if they could sell it. Gord knew that it contained a substance the priest of the grim deity claimed was ichor shed by Neril himself. Gord also knew now that no dealer, collector, or fence in the whole of Greyhawk would even willingly lay eyes on the reliquary, let alone pay cash to possess it. All right, break. So there is some place, there's a great temple of Neril. Now, whether this is within the city limits or some far adventure the two of them have taken and returned, there is not a hint here yet. And it is a very, interesting question. Where is this great temple of Neril? So it is possible it could be a hidden temple in the city of Greyhawk. It could be an outward temple, because Greyhawk is not a good city. It's not a city that may have some very evil deities in the temple district. So I don't know. It's really up to you. It's not detailed in such a way in this material. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 51 and the second paragraph down from the top. "Are your ears falling off, you oaf?" Gord asked his comrade sarcastically. "Didn't I tell you? Old Anya would know the answer. You heard her tell us how to be rid of the thing and be rewarded, too." "I heard her say that dark evil hounds us. I heard her babble gibberish. That is what my good ears heard all too well," Kurt responded, his tone a combination of anger and self-pity. "Aha, she fooled you then, old chum. That biddy is a mean and tricky one, I'll admit," Gord said brightly. "Mean as they come," Chert nodded in agreement. "A tricky, how so?" "She speaks in riddles and half-truths in order to make the customer agree to pay more. We need not worry, though. Recall you the runes and signals I brought forth. Remember the gateway at the last." "So what?" Gord pointed to the dim end of the alley. "See yonder. There is the gate that shuts fast Odd Alley. Beyond must lie our goal." Chert said, doubt creeping across his rugged features. "Come on, I'll show you," Gord said confidently. A few minutes later, that confidence was gone. The distant end of the alley, a place evidently shunned by all living creatures, had its gate, certainly. The portal was old, iron and locked. Knocking, banging, and pounding did no good. "This cannot be," Gord said with exasperation. "Horseshit," his huge comrade sighed. "Let's get out of here and plan a journey. Greyhawk is getting too unhealthy of late. We allow a few assassins, noises in the night, and one locked gate to scare you off," demanded the smaller man. "Gord, if you call murder attempts and night demons nothing, you're either a brave fool or a stupid oaf, and I'm not going to stand around here and ponder which of the two categories best described your present state. I'm going to saddle my horse and ride elsewhere, while I'm still able. You do as you wish, Church said with an air of finality. Gord had tried to make light of their peril ever since they had left the temple with the dreaded yet valuable relic. The young thief pretended it was little more than a joke, because his comrade had stubbornly resisted his plan to steal the reliquary of Nerl from the temple right up until they had actually pulled the thing off. Since then, Chert had said little, but his expression spoke volumes. Gord had noticed that they were followed after they had approached several fences who normally bought stolen items as the purloined reliquary. All of these so-called dealers were quite adamant about their lack of interest, and one of the proprietors had them ejected from his premises at first sight of the pair. Then it was evident that something was seriously amiss. That same night they had been attacked by four assassins. As was customary, Gord and the barbarian had gone on an evening carouse, ending up at the Green Dragon. Because the dauntless duo picked up on the fact that they were being trailed when they left the tavern, both feigned drunkenness, an act that probably saved them their lives. The killers were not as careful as professional assassins should have been. As the assassins sprang from concealment to strike, they found that their drunken victims were anything but disoriented. Gord met them with sword and dagger, Chert with his great axe Brule. When it was over a minute or two later, three of the four murderers were dead, and the fourth managed to escape only by luck. Both adventurers knew they had been lucky. The next time the assassins would be more experienced and much more clever, and the next time was not to be far off. Congratulating themselves on their skill, Gord and Chert had returned victorious to the old stable they had rented and made into an apartment. The two young men carefully barred the door, set various alarms and traps as was customary, and went to bed. They were awakened not long after by a loud clang and an awful blubbering shriek. All right, break. So this section here is very Fritz Lieber, Fairford and Mauser. I very enjoyable. And Gygax does a very nice homage to Lieber right here. Now, he was familiar with Lieber. It's in the Appendix N. Lieber wrote in the early Dragon magazines. So it's not like this is coming from an unexpected source or that Gygax was trying to hide how much the city of Greyhawk, Lonquar, and especially Chert and Gord are, Lieber-esque and how much they're like Fairford and Mauser. So this little bit here with the assassins, I could really feel, and it goes almost to the banter that Fairford and Mauser. Now, Lieber's Fairford and Mauser were more farcical. So even though the descriptions and with enjoyable stories, Gygax is trying here to write something that has a little of that humor, but somewhat more like a sense of some kind of seriousness and reality to it. But Gord is just brushing off the fact that they've now had these assassins come after them. And if you remember, this is actually a theme that Gygax likes. Back into the Hamlet, Temple of Elemental Evil, there is the chance that assassins will come for after the player characters for their various roles that they do in fighting the evil of the Moat House and the evil of the temple. So, it is his idea that this world will have, that your actions can end up getting these assassins coming after you, even after you've perhaps defeated the evil that the evil forces, the evil leader, that there might be larger organizations out there. And definitely stealing from the greater greater Neral temple, a holy reliquary, that is I think showing Gord again with his Gord likes to poke things in the eye and stir up trouble, and more trouble here than even Chert is appreciating. All right, I am going to restart, and it is page 53 and the second paragraph down from the end. Second paragraph from the end. A high window left purposely unshuttered as an inviting means of entry to the place had served its purpose. The window was equipped with a heavy bar of iron that was set to crash into anyone attempting to come into their domicile via this particular route. The trap was set such that a body crossing the sill of the opening would trigger the mechanism, releasing the iron bar. The pair didn't have to wait long for an unsuspecting victim to go to put the device to do a test. Something had indeed entered by the window, and the iron weight had swung like a pendulum, crashing into the ignoble intruder. The impact had broken the cord, and the bar had rung like a bell against the stone wall, as if, as it fell loose, both Chert and Gord had rushed over. To investigate, hearts in their throats and weapons in hands, one look at their catch was enough to make both men shudder. A horrible daemon, a thing with shiny scales and suckered appendages, awaited their arrival. Whatever it was, the heavy lump of iron had damaged it, and the demon was still reeling when Gordon Chert entered the chamber. Sword and axe bit into the horror, and the adventurers managed to deal it mortal wounds before it could recover. Again, they knew that luck had been with them. Future visitors of this ilk would not be dealt with so easily. With all this fresh in his mind, Gord couldn't blame his friend for wanting to plot a new course. He stared at the bulky barbarian for a long moment, Chert's arms crossed, jaw set, and eyes narrowed in a "don't mess with me" glare. Was the perfect picture of resolved determination. But Gord was not about to let him go without a fight. "You lose all claim to the prize if you desert," he tried to goad the hillman into reconsidering. But Chert wouldn't budge. "Well rid of it, and this is far from desertion, my friend. It is definite self-preservation. You seem to have a death wish, and that is one adventure I'd just as soon steer clear of. And you're supposedly the brains behind this partnership. Ah!" The pair stood glaring at each other for a full minute, but despite the harsh look on his face, Gord could not help but smile inwardly. The concern and determination written across the face of his comrade was touching indeed. It was obvious that Chert really meant exactly what he had said, and that he had no intention of allowing himself to be swayed. But Chert had said it himself. Gord was the smarter of the two, and he didn't earn that reputation by letting his hillbilly friend best him. As he saw it, only one course, however devious, remained. "Then prosper and farewell, Chert, old friend, until our paths cross again," Gord said, his eyes beginning to moisten, as he reached up and slapped the big barbarian fondly on his shoulder. clapped Gord on the back so hard that the young thief was nearly bowled over by the blow. The barbarian then spun on his heel and stomped off. Gord stayed where he was, mentally whistling a lively tune while counting the minutes. It took 5 minutes, give or take a few seconds, about what Gord had expected, before his overgrown friend appeared in sight. The husky barbarian's brisk stride, accompanied by a chain of loudly sputtered yet unintelligible curses, told Gord all he needed to know. The angry hillman stamped back to where Gord stood stock still. "How can I leave a small and crazy man to the mercies of the followers of that dung-defiled Narrow?" he cried overdramatically, arms waving madly about, frustration evident in every syllable. "If I'm forced to follow death's road, at least I shall take many with me when I die. What now, my death-defying friend?" Grinning boyishly, Gord slapped his comrade's hand and said just as dramatically, "Ever a stout friend." Then he added soothingly, "Listen, Chert, there must be an answer. Old Anya said our goal was neither here nor there. But if we went from her place to there, we'd gain our fortune, right?" "Yes," Chert agreed, nodding reluctantly. "That much I recall. But what good do her words do us when we don't know what they mean?" "Well, if we couple that what she said with the significance of the gateway," Gord stopped and added emphatically, "I'm sure it's the key." "So what lies on the other side of the gate?" Chert asked, absent-mindedly scratching his head. With the leather-covered tip of his dagger. "How should I know?" Gord snapped, irritated at having his thoughts interrupted. Then, after a few seconds of silence, he said, "There are only a few places here that I can recall. There is the junk store run by that miserly old half-elf Scriggan, the used clothing shop, Friedel's librarium, the potter's booth, the sunken grotto tavern, the money changer's stall, Green Wolfert's apothecary, the crazy limner's place, Zreed's antiquary. That's where we tried to unload the stuff, and the old warehouse and stable across from it at the mouth of the alley. But what's at the hedge?" "But what's at the head?" Chert asked. "The gate, stupid," Gord shot back as he pondered the wisdom of having conned the barbarian into sticking around. Now Chert was grinning. "My point exactly. The gateway, and beyond it. The gate leads to some place. Every place has walls, windows, and doors. Let's find the other side of the doorway and go in that way." "I was just about to suggest that myself," Gord asked lamely. "All right. At the end of that passage, see the dull gleam." "That must be it, Chert. Let's see," Gord agreed as he hurried into the opening. It had taken them hours of searching, walking through the twists and turns of the maze-like lanes and alleys of Old City. A false turn, backtracking, a street angling in the wrong direction. They had even entered a few of the establishments bordering their destination with the intention of finding an excuse to slip out the back doors and thus reach their destination. But to their astonishment, none of the places had back windows, let alone back doors, and they had been not so nicely ejected from the Sunken Grotto Tavern when they were caught painstakingly searching a back room of the establishment in hopes of finding some sort of exit. They probably would never have located the area save for the fact that they happened to end up in just the right location as the last rays of the setting sun illuminated the close and the passage leading from it. The light gave a glimmer of metal for an instant, and the sharp-eyed barbarian was quick to notice. It'll appear of local... Quick to know. It appears to be nothing more than the other side of the iron portal, Gord exclaimed in disappointment after the two had conducted a close inspection of the premises. Before anything further could be said or done, both men heard soft footfalls approaching. Gord and Chirp moved quickly without sound into the far corner of the tunnel. Was this yet another hired murderer? A cloaked figure was silhouetted in the opening of the passage. No features of its face could be discerned, but its body was broad and short. The person went directly to the metal door, evidently not noticing that the passageway was occupied. The iron turned phosphorescent when the figure touched it with something, and then the door was gone, revealing a dim space beyond. Before either of the young men could react, the stocky figure stepped through the arch and was gone. The iron gate reappeared. "What the hell's?" Chert asked in a hushed voice. Gord squeezed his friend's massive forearm. "That is a most ensorcelled portal, but it leads to where we must go. Come on, let's see if we can discover the merman." "Let's see if we can discover the mechanism by which that fellow operated it." Neither struck a light, nor wishing to attract attention, there was just enough illumination from the deepening twilight to serve their purpose. Using fingers, palms, and dagger points, Gord and Chirk carefully went over every inch of the portal, but the rusted metal revealed not the slightest hint as to how it operated. No amount of inspection of the posts and walls to either side yielded anything useful either. Even Gord's metal-penetrating dagger would not pierce the door. Both were ready to give up when yet another sound of footsteps came faintly to their ears. All right, and I'm going to end this for the night right here. So we can see it's a magic portal. Gord, it glows phosphorescent, and the character, the broad, short character, perhaps a dwarf who went ahead of them, passes through. So it tells Gord and Chirp what to expect, and then this is a nice set location within Old City. We don't know where. Does not sound, definitely not the slum quarter there with the businesses that are described. And we do get the description, the name, not the description, of the tavern of that, the Sunken Grotto. So maybe at some point we can kind of place Odd Alley using the Sunken Grotto. And we have a little description of the area around it with the shops. All right. It is just about 7. I'm going to be calling in Craig, and I think this was a good reading tonight. And not as many slip-ups for me this time.